Session number 29702, Reel 4.
So, the answer is exact bombing, debombing if possible, and satellite bombing. But also important is that you stay with one group of targets for a length of time until you have dropped out these targets. It may be traffic, it may be fuel, including the synthetic fuel plants we had. Stay with this for weeks and drop out one group of targets completely. And this mistake, in my opinion, has been made also by the Luftwaffe, which slips over from one day or even from one incursion to the other, from one group of targets to the other. But also, the 8th Air Force was not free from this mistake.
Thank you. Gentlemen, right at the back.
Max Cole, 351st Bomb Group. How much did Hermann Göring fly?
During the Battle of Britain, the BBC has announced a news that Hermann Göring has been seen on top of London, and in the middle of a German formation. And this news has been denied the next day by saying Hermann Göring was mixed up with a balloon. So the answer is he didn't fly any mission. He was flying in the co-pilot seat, a special seat, much wider than a normal one. Much more comfortable than the normal one in a Junkers 52. Sometimes escorted by fighters.
I made a terrible omission. I told you there were two Congressional Medal of Honor winners here. In fact, there are three. There's a very famous one whose story is used in the fictional film 12 O'Clock High, and a man who went out over Berlin on the first daylight raid on that city with his parachute under his arm and clipped it on. I refer to none other than John Red Morgan, and I'd like John to come up the front with Mr. Michael and Mr. Lawley so we can see three Congressional Medal of Honor winners from the 8th Air Force. In the autumn of 1943, the P-38 Lightning, the Lockheed P-38 Lightning, appeared on the scene. Now, this aircraft has been mentioned earlier. I must admit to having no bias, but when you look at the statistical records, I'm afraid there is no escaping the fact that the P-38 had the highest accident rate of all major American fighter planes in World War II. It had the highest abort rate in the 8th Air Force, 50% on some of the early missions. It had the highest lost rate. Now, I thought it was a super plane, and I know that in the audience we have people who flew that plane and loved it, and they're here today to show that it was a pretty good plane. But my first question must be, and I put this to Cass, who loved the P-38, what was wrong with the aircraft?
Hasn't hardened my the original P-38. There were too many limitations put on the original aircraft by the people at Wright Field, and I think originally probably by Lockheed. Although the people at Wright Field probably double the number of restrictions on the aircraft that Lockheed wanted to put on, just to make sure, so to speak. Supercharger speeds, the induction system itself was too small to permit the proper amount of fuel to be ingested, combat power. Getting out of the airplane was not an easy thing to do. If any of you have ever bailed out of one, it was not an easy task. It was formidable, as a matter of fact, and it gave you to think sometimes about, do I want to bail out, or shall I try to ride this thing home? Either one kind of fraught with problems. The engine problems were the basic problems with the P-38, in my opinion. It was a big, heavy airplane, and I think many of the losses that the poor ready rate, the number of aborts that Roger referred to, many of them could be laid right again at that pilot error. No matter how carefully trained the pilot was on the books, so to speak, each pilot, and God bless them, had his own idea about how the airplane should be flown, how the engine should be treated, how much power he could pull from it under certain circumstances, and why he shouldn't do what the book said he should do. And as a net result, you had a bunch of independent operators, which, of course, made the Air Force, as far as I'm concerned, long range it made the Air Force. The airplane was not as difficult to fly as a lot of people thought it was, and it was a much better aircraft in certain situations than the majority of people thought. For my goal, I flew maybe only 20 missions or so, really serious missions in P-38s, but there was always that nice comforting thought about if one fan quits turning, the other fan hopefully will continue to turn. When I look at some of the problems the other aircraft had in the theater, I think that the jockeys of the P-38s had as much, if not more, confidence in their ability to come home, as did, or more so maybe, than the pilots of the Jug and the P-51s. But basically, as a writer, to answer your question, the problem was, the initial problem, the lack of poop in the aircraft was due to restrictions put on it by Wright Field and other people in service command. But when we changed, and I was going to touch on that Saturday night, I'll do it now, Ryder. When we made some changes in the field, in my airplane, that I wanted made, and ran the risk of getting court-martialed for making those changes, as you know was the case, things began to happen. The aircraft began to perform better. And those things that were done, changes in the induction system particularly, higher supercharger speeds, which were a part of this whole study, the aircraft became a better combat aircraft. And those were fed back to the states, and reluctantly, and I say very reluctantly, the Air Force, the then Army Air Force, gave orders to Lockheed to make the changes on subsequent serial numbers of the P-38s. Long winded. Roger, anything else you'd like to ask? It was easy.
No, Cass, I think that does cover it, unless anyone else on the table has got any observations to make. I'm sure that we will hear other things from the audience about the P-38. I know we have a very distinguished P-38 pilot, one of the very first P-38 aces in the audience, Jack Ilfrey, and who he was here in 42. The airplane certainly was a problem airplane, but as I said, a lot of people loved it. And, you know, what can you say about that? But that leads us to what the Luftwaffe thought of the P-38. And I want to ask General Gallen if he would like to comment on what he thought of the aircraft and what his pilots thought of the aircraft, whether they thought it was an easy plane to fight or a difficult plane to fight, and any other observations he'd like to make.
Yes, our opinion about the Lightning was not very high. We thought this was a similar mistake like the Luftwaffe did with the 110. Twin engine fighter is almost inferior to a single engine fighter with respect to acceleration, to maneuverability. Not in one respect, there is range and firepower. The firepower in the Lightning was impressive, like it was in the 1-1-0. But we did not respect the Lightning as a real danger in the air. We had also a twin tail aircraft made by Fokker Wulf. It was a reconnaissance aircraft, and it was mainly used in the Eastern Front. And the troops on the ground were calling him Felix. Felix is a Latin word that means the heavy one. Heavy because having two tails.
It's all right, it'll get to him in a minute. They're a bit, you know. A cat with two tails? Well, I will now do the honors of exporting an English saying, as happy as a cat with two tails. That means, boy, have you got joy. You'll have to forgive these Americans, General. They're a bit slow in catching up with the language we gave them a few years ago. Sorry. Well, I don't know whether Cass has any more to say on the P-38 at this stage, or would you like to leave that to question time? Okay, well then let's go on to the P-51, which came about the same time late in 1943. This is the Packard Merlin engine P-51, which certainly had its problems when it arrived. And obviously, the people to talk about this are Cass and Richard. We'll start with Richard, who was one of the early P-51 pilots in the 8th Air Force, and ask for his opinion on the aircraft, both technically and as a fighting machine.
In our experience with the Mustang, we felt, after we had our transition, we arrived in November 1943, the 357th Fighter Group. We were the first group in the 8th Air Force, and we then took a period of through the end of the year for a transition experience in learning the new aircraft. One of the interesting aspects of that is it had two main tanks, one in each wing, and then a fuselage tank of 85 gallons immediately behind the pilot. The original, or the first models that we had also a greenhouse top-closing canopy. In our transition period, with a full fuselage tank on takeoff, we had to literally force the tail in the air because of the extreme weight of about 500 pounds immediately behind us in fuel. With a full fuel tank on tight turns, we would suck it into a turn and then have to hold the stick forward because the inertia of the rear tank had a tendency to dish out and keep you moving in that turn. So it got to be a little tricky in order to understand the aircraft to begin with. The other thing that gave us a bit of a problem when we initiated our first escort missions was the greenhouse that closed had a series of bars on it. And there's nothing more distracting than have to dodge around to keep your swivel head clear from all around you and having to look through a maze of greenhouse latticework to cut away from blind spots. So these were the two primary things that gave us fits to begin with. But when we came to firing our guns on the P-51B model, our first experience in any firing of the guns in a tight turn, or any kind of, as much as even 2 Gs, which is very little incidentally, the guns would jam. So there's the feed You'd fire it, one shell would go, it would jam, it would not feed it again, and you can't get out there to prime the 50 caliber guns. So there I am in one case on the first Berlin mission, tangling with three 109s, fire once and no guns. So we kept climbing for altitude and turning into each other, and then finally I climbed and headed home. They either were concerned about me, and I certainly was concerned about them. But that was one of the problems that was very difficult to answer for some.
Cass, I know you did some of the early test flying on the Merlin-engined B-51. Can we have comments from you?
We were asked to find out why the... as a matter of fact, we found out about the jamming of the guns after the first round was fired. We did some work on that and made some suggestions, and I think that about half of the B-51s in the field were modified, and the rest of the modifications were done in the ZI on aircraft that were in process or about ready to be shipped over. The problem was eliminated in about, I've forgotten the serial number, but about the 100th aircraft that was made, the problem was eliminated. There were other problems with the B-51. You may remember, in even a relatively shallow dive with any kind of a pullout, the wheel well doors open. You remember that? I remember very well because it happened to me and tore off a wheel well door, and then I did one of the quickest maneuvers that I've ever done in my life, and so I mounted a camera along with the help from the North American representative so that I could watch to see what was happening, and did a series of shallow and steeper and steeper and steeper dives to see what rate the wheel well doors came open, and then we got it fixed with a latch, if you may recall, a simple latch on there. It was done to all the aircraft in the field through Service Command, who took our word for it at that time. They didn't take our word about much, but once in a while they did in this particular case. The fine airplane, I never liked particularly the idea of one 30 caliber bullet from a German Mauser being able to put me out of commission. I wasn't very happy with that score because you don't want to expose on the empennage, the exposure of the oil cooler particularly. Made it a very difficult thing to, an easy thing for to cope with if you wanted to shoot it down, much easier than you could on the heavy belly P-47 and to a degree the P-38. The Merlin engine itself was a delight after we found that some of the fairings on the engine had to be changed somewhat to do a little bit better job of cooling. And as soon as we were able to educate the pilots that they just simply, if they wanted the range, and they just simply had to use high BMEP rather than run it, you know, with a high RPM and low manifold pressure and use up all the fuel. The plug, sure, they did give some problems. But by and large, the Merlin, with the help of the people at Uckland, the Rolls-Royce place, we were able to solve most of those problems.
Thank you, Cass. What was it like as a fighting machine, Richard?
Sweetheart.
He's biased.
It was a real sweetheart. I mean, I felt, compared to the P-47, that I was sitting in a bathtub in a 47, I felt like you literally put the machine on. I think in scale it probably was slightly larger than the 109, but the compactness was probably a parallel. You didn't feel like you bounded around in it. Everything was handy. I could fly instruments with my trim tab. All three trim tab down on my left hand. You drop your hand down, drop your seat down, look straight ahead at the horizon, and fly instruments by using the trim tab. We didn't have automatic pilots, by the way. The firepower, I think, was more than adequate with 50 caliber guns harmonized. Ours were 300 yards. I had a 70 mil sight, fixed sight. We do have the later on the automatic sights that I just didn't feel comfortable with it. If we tried to stretch our range and go to higher pitch, slower RPM, and a leaner mixture, we'd let up the plugs. We'd have to watch for that. If we taxied out for takeoff as we did in a wing or a group formation, three squadrons in each group, and then the lead squadron would be taking off first, the tail end squadron that would be taking off, if he didn't open up the shutters that were on the coolant, you, chances are we'd end up with a geyser where the engine would overheat, and then you'd lose coolant from the automatic release of high pressure in the coolant. And this, of course, meant that aircraft was down until it could cool off. The doors that Cass mentioned, for those that are not familiar with it, the wheel door covers on the retractable gear would drop down. They would drop down to let the wheels come up and then go back on up again to close the gap, giving then a clean surface on the bottom to the least resistance. So when you drop your wheels again, the wheel well doors would have to come down, the wheels would drop down, the doors would go back up again. So it was that compound eccentricity that often gave problems, where the wheel door would come up too soon and jam the wheel in a down position, and we lost a few airplanes like that, and they have to land with the wheel up. Other than that, as a fighting machine, I think it was probably with the 208-gallon tanks, the 92 gallons in each main, and the 85-gallon fuselage tank, provided we got no interference. We were able to go for 6 hours, which on many missions we were Bruxelles in Czechoslovakia, Prague, nearby, Poland, east of Berlin, Munich, and to the Mediterranean, and back to England. Our base was in England all the time. They made one Russian trip while I was home on R&R between tours. But the range was what I think most bomber pilots were looking for, to have protection over the target.
Okay, well, the obvious is to invite the Luftwaffe's opinion on this aircraft. So, General Gallen, once again, can I ask you to tell us what you thought of it?
We knew in advance that the B-51 was coming up. We knew about the performance, and we knew about the number which would be available and produced per month. Goering never did accept his numbers, and never he wanted to believe what he didn't like. There was a colonel who made this intelligence available to us. I remember very well his face and his name. It was a Colonel Schwenke. And Goering always, when I told him, "Very soon we will see the day bombers escorted by fighters over Berlin." He said, "You are completely crazy." And I said, "We have the information." He said, "Yes, I know. You have it from the Lügen Schwenke, from the Schwenke the liar." Unfortunately, the liar had right. And the range was what impressed us most. Berlin was not at all the limit of the range. You know that many raids have been made over Germany with landings in Russia. Others have made from England to South Germany with landing in South Italy. So this tremendous range, we didn't expect it. It impressed us most. The performance, especially in altitude, was also so that our fighters felt inferior. The question came up very often, why didn't you attack the B-51s when they were loaded full of fuel in the beginning? The answer is, we had to concentrate our fighter forces and to build up a complete new tactic in assembling very, very big formations. we used all our fighter force, even if they were stationed in South Germany, with drop tanks to be assembled against an incursion against Middle Germany or Berlin or even North Germany. So I believe, and I would like to make the statement, the P-51 has been the best escort fighter of World War II, right from the beginning up to his end, up to the end.
Thank you, General. Well, the two bomber boys at the end here, I can see, are fretting. We haven't forgotten you. In fact, I now want to ask about the build-up of the 8th Air Force in the winter of 1943-44, when it doubled in size. Most of these new groups were B-24 equipped. So, I'd like to know from General Andre what he thought of the new types of B-24 that were coming along, the B-24H and J models with the turrets, how they compared with the older D model, which didn't have a nose turret, and generally what he felt about the newer Liberator bombers, how they were in action, whether he preferred to fly the older models to the newer models, and just how the war had developed for the Liberator men up to that time.
We had some, can you hear now? I'm not sure what this thing is on. We had some problems, I think, with these new B-24s, because with the weight and balance thing had always been a little bit of a problem, and I think these new turrets sort of added to that. And I remember General Doolittle flew into our base one afternoon late when I was in the tower, and all there was a stand down because the weather was so bad, and he was flying a P-38 because he always flew the most unpopular airplane to try to heighten the morale of those that had to fly them. But anyhow, he was great, great. He's one of my top heroes. But I didn't know who it was in this P-38. I couldn't imagine the guy coming in there unless it was an emergency. And I got in my little Jeep and rode out to where he had stopped his aircraft and asked him what could not take him to the club. He said, "No, I want to go and check a hard stand and see what these airplanes are like, these new airplanes, and see..."